This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a discussion of Hawaii's feral cat population and the public health issue of toxoplasmosis, a common parasitic infection that is spread through cat feces.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us on today's program are Bruce Anderson, former state health director and current director of the Division of Aquatic Resources at the State Department of Land and Natural Resources. Dr. Terry Work, a wildlife disease specialist and veterinarian at the USGS National Wildlife Health Center in Honolulu. And Jessica James of Poi Dogs and Popoki, a group that operates a spay and neuter mobile clinic. She's also a medical instructor and currently manages several cat colonies on Oahu.
And welcome to you all, and we want to encourage listeners to call in. If you're on Oahu, you can call us at 941-3689. Anywhere on the neighbor islands, you can reach us at 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Today we're talking about toxoplasmosis. It's a disease that can be spread by cat feces. It has killed at least 8 endangered monk seals, can also affect wildlife in the islands. And so, Terry, let me start with you. How widespread a problem and how serious a problem is this?
Toxoplasmosis is island-wide. We found it in wild animals on the Big Island, Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and it's also affected monk seal. So it is wherever we have cats, we have toxoplasmosis in Hawaii.
And Bruce Anderson, how many cats have we got? I mean, wild estimate, right? Impossible to say for sure. Feral cat population.
We do have some numbers from state parks, for example. We've actually done a census of cats there and found about 870 cats living in those parks. That's doesn't sound like a huge number, but that's a very small area, of course. The best estimate I've heard is here on Oahu, we have about 300,000 cats, many of which are feral cat animals as well as the domestic cats. But that numbers are quite large. Even those 870 cats produce billions of oocysts. These are the eggs that transmit toxoplasmosis. And in fact, every cat probably produces 140 billion eggs over their lifetime. They shed the eggs only for a relatively short period, for a few weeks, but of course, over there, when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of cats, that's a lot of opportunity for infection. And I might add, in addition to affecting wild animals, domestic animals, birds, and of course the marine mammals, it's also a problem for people. The two groups that we're most concerned about are people whose immune systems are compromised. Typically, those are people with AIDS, HIV infection, and we have about 1,500 people here with stage 3 AIDS. Their immune systems are compromised and they can't fight off the infection. Also pregnant mothers, and in fact their children are at high risk. Toxoplasmosis is shown to be causing a number of problems in children, but they include blindness and nervous system problems that can be fatal. So it's not a minor problem for those groups. But most people don't show signs of infection, even if they're infected. The best numbers we have are about 10% of the population has antibody to toxo, and that's a lot of people here in Hawaii. Think we have 1.4 million people here. That's over 100,000 people who have been infected in their lives and are antibody positive from being exposed to cat feces or raw meat, which can also be a high risk for people. The cysts are transmitted in meat, in the muscle of the meat and so forth. So undercooked meat's always a risk for those high risk individuals.
Just to be clear, Bruce, it has to be ingested. It's not airborne or waterborne.
That's correct. Usually a person's exposed directly or indirectly to cat feces or to contaminated meats. Dr. Work can tell you more about the way it's transmitted in animals, and I think he probably best answer that question.
Now, Terry, you and I were talking earlier, and you had mentioned in places like France, they have a very high rate of toxo, and it's because they ingest a lot of raw meat there.
That is exactly right. So the way this parasite works is that it's just like any other animal. It reproduces sexually, And the only place it can reproduce sexually is in the intestines of a cat. Cat, leopard, lion, ocelot, any feline animal. And so this is why cats are so critical to the maintenance of this parasite in ecosystems, because that's the only place where the parasite can have sex. And we've shown in areas where there's no cats that there is no toxoplasmosis. Eventually, the parasite dies out. So the cat really plays an absolutely crucial role in the maintenance of this parasite. And really what we're dealing with is in Hawaii is a classic case of what we call pathogen pollution. You have animals that are polluting the environment with this pathogen. And it's unfortunately affecting endangered wildlife like Hawaiian crows, Hawaiian nene, Hawaiian monk seals, all of which I might add are critically endangered. And we have more endangered animals per capita than any other state in the union. So these wild animals need all the help they can get.
This pathogen is being shared by a beloved domestic animal whose numbers have grown out of control. And that's kind of, Jessica James of Poi Dogs on Popoki, that's kind of your kuleana protecting these animals whose numbers have gotten pretty crazy. What kind of numbers do you see in your work?
That's correct. Well, some of the colonies have a lot of cats, like upwards of 200 or more. Places like Hawaii Kai, down near my house in Mililani, we have some larger colonies as well. Most of the colonies are well under 100 cats. You're talking about maybe 5 to 20 cats in each colony. And as we discussed before, it's actually hard to count all of these cats. So they're very evasive. They look alike. It would require a lot of manpower and money to go out and get an accurate picture of how many cats there are. I believe trap-neuter release helps lower those numbers. It keeps kittens out of the environment for sure. And we know that kittens are one of the main carriers of toxo because they haven't built up antibodies to toxo. So by doing TNR, we're reducing the number of kittens spreading toxo in the environment. I also think it's important to remember that not the entire cat population is infected with toxoplasmosis at any given time. If you look at previous studies, it's around half of the cat population. And not all of those infected are actually shedding eggs. Less than 1% of that cat population infected with toxoplasmosis is actually shedding eggs at any given time. And the eggs are not infective right away. It takes about 1 to 5 days for those to be infective.
Now, we should probably point out for our listeners, you know, there are various groups on the island and the Hawaiian Humane Society that has maybe a different viewpoint. You folks are of the no-kill, I guess, policy, and they do euthanize the cats that are dropped off at the facility there.
Correct. Last year alone, the Humane Society took in 10,910 cats. Not all of them were alive, and some of them went back to their owners, but of those cats that were alive and didn't go back to their owners, they euthanized 85% of them. And that's a very high number. It's unacceptable.
Here's a written question from a man on the Big Island. Larry says his dogs on the Big Island kill and eat feral cats. Is there a danger to him or his dogs?
Well, his dogs will probably, they might get infected with toxoplasmosis, but it should pose minimal danger to the dogs. Remember, this disease, for the most part, in most animals, doesn't really show severe clinical signs unless the situations that Dr. Anderson mentioned with the immunocompromised patients or pregnant females. But the issue is, again, is the wildlife. You know, we have more endangered birds in the state than any other state in the union, and we know that we're losing birds to cat predation and also toxoplasmosis. And these animals need all the help they can get. And these cats are doing what cats do. It's not their fault. And it's really, this issue is a people problem. If we get people to come together and figure out a way to keep cats out of the habitat and away from the wildlife, I think that would do our animals, you know, our wild native animals, a lot of good.
So what you're saying then is it's really personal responsibility. I know with the folks that manage the cat colonies, mm-hmm. there's concern because while you manage and you can spay and neuter the cats that are there, you have a problem of people dropping off and dumping their cats because they know somebody is feeding them. So you've got this problem on your hands.
Correct. Some of the colonies have the problem more so than others. I don't see a ton of dumps in my colonies, but I know caretakers that have dumps every single week or every single month. The laws here do not protect the animals, and they don't punish the people who abandon the animals. So you are actually fined more for dumping trash than you are for dumping an animal.
Now, I used to have a cat, and my cat would go indoors and outdoors. So is the idea then pet owners should try and keep their cats indoors?
Absolutely. And that's the issue, is that, you know, if once these cats are outdoors, they can wreak havoc on birds and native wildlife, both, again, through predation and through toxoplasmosis. I mean, even Halei National Wildlife Refuge, I had a biologist who emailed me a photograph of a native Hawaiian coot that was being carried by a feral cat that had been predated upon. And again, these are very critically endangered animals. And the problem with Hawaii is that a lot of these wild animals have evolved in isolation from predators and parasites. So they've lost a lot of their immune response to these invasive pathogens. They've lost their ability to defend themselves against predators because they evolve without predators. And so now we're dealing with a situation where these animals are trying to play catch-up evolutionarily with these introduced pathogens and these introduced predators. And I'm just concerned that we may not have enough time to recover these animals if we don't do something about some of these things we can do something about.
Let me add, if I could. You know, we talk about monk seals, for example. The same issue is apparent there. They don't have an immune system that's developed that can fight off the infection. These being exposed to large cat colonies is, or the, at least the eggs from those colonies near shore is a serious problem for them. They're simply not equipped to deal with that, and probably the same with the spinner dolphins. We mentioned, a cat has a relatively short period of time when they're actually actively excreting the cysts, but again, each of those cats is excreting 123 billion cysts during their lifetime, even if it's only for a few weeks. But those cysts live for months. In fact, as I recall, there are studies showing them to live up to 18 months. So they're out there in the environment, and people and animals can be exposed to them. And we're talking about trillions of these eggs that are being washed down into our streams, out into the ocean, where people can get exposed as well as animals. So that's the reason you see the high infection rates. People wonder, well, how can a seal be exposed to cats? Well, that's what happens. You have the cat feces and the more importantly the oocysts, the eggs that are produced washing into the nearshore environment where animals can be exposed. Caimana, the seal that had gave birth on at Caimana Beach, is a classic example, but not unique. I remember going to Hanama Bay, and I watched people in the parking lot feeding cats. And at the same time, there was a seal on the beach right below them. And I'll bet that none of those people even thought about toxoplasmosis when they were feeding those cats. They were doing what they thought was good, you know, obviously maintaining cat colonies there. They'd been there for a long time. But at the same time, they don't think about toxo and what its impacts are. And whether a cat's neutered or not, they are transmitting that disease.
Were this disease transmitted by any other animal than one that is a, as I said, beloved domestic animal, would we be simply, you know, setting out to eradicate them if this were brought to the islands by a snail or something that we don't consider a cuddly pet? Would we just simply be eradicating that animal
or trying to? That is a very interesting question, because one of the arguments that is made by a lot of cat colony proponents is that trap and neuter works to control populations. So by that logic, we have other invasive mammals. We have invasive rats. We have invasive mongoose. We have invasive mice. So we should be setting up trap and neuter colonies for those animals as well, if it's that effective of a control situation. The studies that I've read, by and large, show that it really doesn't work to reduce feral cat populations. It really maintains them at the very least. And so, you know, it is absolutely a value judgment. You know, there's a segment of society that values feral cats over native wildlife. There's a segment of society that values native wildlife over feral cats. And so the question is, how do we bridge that gap and make something happen? Because ultimately, it's the wildlife that's losing out. You know, I keep hammering this home, but we have more per capita endangered birds in this state than any other state of the union. And it would really be a crime if we lost these endangered birds to a problem that we can easily manage if we have the political will.
We should point out that it's not just an issue with feral cats, that you can get toxo if you have a cat and you have a cat litter box that you change. We have a staffer whose sibling, I think, experienced some temporary blindness because of their cat, and a former coworker, his sister-in-law, miscarried because of toxo. So it's not just feral cats. It's also cats that you have in your home.
Terry, you just said this is a problem that could be solved if we had the political will. The political will to do what? Eradicate?
Well, I think it's going to be a mixture of different options. I mean, ideally, if we could find a solution where we didn't have to kill cats, that would be lovely. But I think, you know, in reality, that's not going to happen. And I think there's going to have to be some situations where you have to trap and kill cats. There, ideally, if we can get situations where we can get cats adopted, that would be great. But yeah, it's one of these situations with given current technologies, you really can't make an omelet without breaking eggs.
You're not going to get cats adopted when the numbers are there in the hundreds of thousands.
You're not. And so, you know, unfortunately, there's going to have to be some animals that are going to have to be euthanized humanely. And I might add that these animals that are in the wild, these feral cats, their quality of life is far lower than a cat that's indoors. If I was a cat, I'd much rather be curled up on my owner's lap in a warm house than fending for myself out in a state park. I mean, we know that they have more diseases, they have poorer body conditions, so the quality of life for these animals is far less than it is for a home-owned cat.
Jessica, you're a volunteer who works with feral cat populations. What's your take?
Yeah, and a colony caretaker for many different colonies across the island. And I will tell you that most of my colony cats are very healthy because we need to respect the difference between caretakers and feeders. Feeders are people that come in and just simply drop food, whether it's cat food or some other type of food, and they're not contributing to fixing these cats and getting them vet care. A true caretaker is going to come in and look at the population, see who needs to be fixed, get them in to be fixed, vetted. They're going to feed them proper cat food, and so you're not looking at cats ingesting infected meat, having babies, or being in poor condition, like Terry mentioned. Obviously, the cats in the more mountainous areas or the state parks, I'm not sure if the cats in the state parks have colony caretakers, but Bruce was saying that one of the ways they counted them was by doing a survey, so I would assume that they've spoken with someone close to those colonies, so they probably have caretakers.
If I might also just add to part of the problem, I mentioned, I think, 870 or so cats in our state parks. We looked at how much fecal material is being produced by those cats. And if you use an ounce and a half a day, which is a fairly small amount, it's not out of chocolate you'd put in a latte in the morning, it comes to 14 tons of cat poop for just those cats. Now multiply that by whatever the factor is to get up to your 300,000. But I don't see a lot of caretakers picking up after the cats. They can't. The cats go off and they defecate someplace else. But that's a problem not only from the standpoint of toxoplasmosis, but you have a lot of other diseases associated with cats and cat poop. You've got hookworm, for example, and many other diseases that attracts flies and so forth. But just the waste material from these animals is significant. 14 tons for 870 cats, that's a lot in my mind. And that's just our state parks. That's not accounting everywhere else you see cat colonies. So it is a health problem from that standpoint as well.
Now, DLNR, I know, came under heat recently because of some new rules, boating rules, harbor rules. Because you are trying to manage the cat population at some of the boat harbors, what's the solution when you've got, a segment of the community that says, yes, you need to eradicate, and then you have another group like Jessica's mm-hmm. that says, no, this is the best method? I mean, there's no meeting of the minds here.
No, there isn't, but what you'll find is that where people feed the cats, that's where they congregate. That's why they're there, is people are feeding them. So if you don't feed the cats, they go somewhere else. Now, that may not be the best place for the cats, but obviously when you're looking at both waste production and the health associated with the cats, You want to keep them away from the water. That's not to say you it's going to help a lot to move them just a little bit, Malka, but it's obviously the worst place to have cats is at the beach, or beach parks, around harbors and places where their feces can wash directly into the water very, very quickly. You know, I also we have problems with salmonella, cryptosporidium, hookworms, giardia. There are lots of problems associated with cat poop that you want to avoid, whether in a harbor or wherever it might be. But there is a particularly large problem in the state harbors. There are lots of cats in those areas, and I can't answer why that would be, but we've certainly seen that. Go out to Kehi Lagoon sometime, and you'll see cats along the road there, probably kind of 100 cats just every time I launch my boat there. It's a serious problem in some areas. That happens to be one where there are lots of cats.
Terry, this in my mind, this is leading me back to what we were just talking about just a couple minutes ago. This sounds to me like let me be a devil's advocate. It sounds to me like a public health problem that is currently out of control, control of which problem is being held back for a kind of sentimental reasons. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think there was Chris Lepsek, who's a faculty at Indiana State University. When he was a faculty here, he did a systematic survey of public attitudes towards feral cats in Hawaii, and 75% of the public favors seeing less feral cats out there in the wild. So I think there's the broad majority of people would like to see less feral cats out there, and it really boils down to what society values. If you value feral cats more, then that's what you'll have. If you value intact ecosystems and native wildlife, then you'll do something about the feral cats. I might add that there's other countries where there's a lot of public support for eliminating invasive mammals. New Zealand and Australia, they've made it a national goal to eliminate feral rats and feral cats from their ecosystems because they know that they have these native species that are impacted by these invasive mammals, and they favor those native species over feral cats. Now, if that's a different equation here in Hawaii, then that's what the decision the people make.
But you're saying eradicate them.
I think they do not belong in native ecosystems. Absolutely not.
And I might add, in New Zealand, you're actually seeing a resurgence now of the native birds and things that they didn't. So it's working there. They've taken a very aggressive role. They value the animals, the native animals, more than they do the feral cats. And they've made a tough decision to get rid of the cats. I'm sure they had a lot of pushback for the same reasons we do here. But they obviously have set their value as the native wildlife. And that's been identified as a national goal, and it's working. The programs there have actually seen a return of many of the endangered animals that they're wanting to protect.
Here's an email from Basil Scott of the Kauai Community Cat Project for Dr. Work. Isn't it true that only alala have been significantly impacted by toxo? Also, isn't it true that only 8 seals in 10 years have died in over a decade, a time period during which over 2,000 seals died, mostly from human interaction? It's from Basil Scott of the Kauai Community Cat Project.
Well, I think putting quote-unquote only to just attribute the functional extinction of an animal from the native forest, I think that's a little bit rich. Honestly, the Hawaiian crow is our only existing crow. And the fact that we had to pull it out from the wild in part because of toxoplasmosis, I think is pretty pathetic. And so, yeah, it is a big deal. And absolutely, the cats were responsible. And I might add that they are now reintroducing the crows. And I can guarantee you that they are managing and controlling, eliminating feral cats from those release habitats because they don't want a recapitulation of that failure.
We are getting a number of emails. We have one from George. He says that NOAA recently announced that monk seal populations are up 3% in each of the last 3 years. Where is the epidemic? Where are the headlines? Toxo is so rare that any case makes international news. Why are the anti-cat people so adamant to bring this up when the Hawaii Health Department says there's no issue? Where cases are reported, they are few and far between. 8 monk seals died over 16 years. That's a half a seal over 16 out of 1,500 seals. Not a reason to kill thousands of cats.
Well, you're not counting the animals that are not detected. And therein lies a problem with wildlife disease surveillance. We are only reporting what we see, and what we see is only a minor fraction of what is actually existing out there. So I think just, you know, again, you're talking about endangered animals here. We're not talking about harbor seals in California where there's tons of them. We're talking about critically endangered species where your tax dollars, I might add, are being spent to try to recover these animals on the one hand. And so we should be doing everything we can to help these animals get a leg up to recover.
Aren't the Alala's numbers just down practically in the dozens?
Well, I don't know the exact numbers, and I do know that they're reintroducing them. But yes, they were functionally extinct in the wild.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, they had to pull in all the remaining crows from the wild because in part of the feral cat problem.
Same with the Nene, by the way. And, you know, they were down to like 30 birds at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're back up, and they're actually, I think, talking about delisting them as being endangered. They're protected now because they have done well. I also need to emphasize that they've only identified 8 seals, but again, there are probably far more that we haven't been able to find because they sink, they are eaten by sharks and other animals. Same with the spinner dolphins. We have no idea really how many are out there that have been impacted, but we know those were, and it can happen.
Jessica James of Poidois and Popoki, you operate a spay neuter mobile clinics, and mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, we're hearing arguments on the eradication side.
Correct.
I just wondered what your response is to that.
I honestly, I don't believe it's possible at all. Cats are a very evasive species when they want to be, and you're not going to be able to find all of them. It's going to take a lot of money and manpower in order to do that. And it's just, in my mind, it's not possible, and especially with so many people dumping and abandoning pets. And we have, they talked about New Zealand and Australia, for example, eradicating these animals. There have been studies done in Tasmania where these researchers set up game cameras in the areas where the animals were being eradicated. And what actually happened is because they trapped and removed the dominant cats, the more subordinate cats from the outlying areas came in, and the population actually increased. And they didn't expect that. So they could be dealing with stuff like that as well. So they can try to eradicate them. Maybe in the more mountainous areas it might work. And we do understand the impact as cat lovers. We do understand the impact. We don't want to undermine your feelings on that. But I think what's important is not demonizing cats here. It's not, we don't want everyone to think that they're murderers or they're just completely disease-ridden creatures on this planet, because that can also critically endanger them.
I think too, I think it's a multi-tiered solution. I mean, eradication, obviously, I mean, or eliminating cats from the environment, whether you capture them and remove them or kill them, is one aspect. But I think the other aspect is we need to focus on the supply. And part of that is responsible cat ownership. If you have a cat, chip it. If it's found on the street, you get a $500 fine. If it's got kitten, you get a $10,000 fine. We hit people in the wallet, and we encourage responsible animal ownership. Because until we deal with the source of these cats, we could be sitting there and spending thousands of dollars shooting cats in the forest, and that's not going to do jack diddly. We need to stop the source. We need to have fewer unwanted cats. We need to have more responsible ownership. And if people aren't going to take, if they're not going to take responsibility for an animal, then you're going to get a fine. And we're going to fine your butt until you do.
I absolutely agree with that. We have such a huge problem in Hawaii. We have such a transient population, and we have, renters that aren't allowed to have cats. We have limits on the number of animals, and we have so many people moving and dumping their animals, or they're not able to afford them. There's really no good excuse for dumping an animal. When you microchip an animal, if it ends up on the street and it's turned into the Humane Society, they call you as an owner or caretaker to come pick up that animal. And I agree with Dr. Work. I think that if you are called to pick up an animal that is microchipped to you and you fail to take ownership for that animal, you should be fined heavily.
We've got a couple of callers on the line, and you can join us, and we invite you to join in our discussion by calling us at 941-3689, or if you're on a neighbor island, call us at 1-877-941-3689. And we have a call on the line from Kapa'au. Jim, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, like, when, you know, we go to swim at the beach and stuff, even though we don't have cats, you know, in my house, and my daughters don't have cats in their house, and I have grandchildren, Are you at risk? Because there's a lot of cats up on the shoreline, you know. Are you at risk? Can you get it that way?
Yes. This is Bruce answering. Yes, is a short answer. These eggs that are produced persist for many months and can live in sand and in water for a long period of time. And you can be infected by ingesting the water if it has some eggs in it, or directly from the sand. You know what cats do in sand. If there are lots of cats around, you are at risk, not only of toxoplasmosis, but some of those other problems that I mentioned, hookworm, giardia, and some of the other things that the parasites that we often associate with these animals. So it's always a good idea to keep, you know, you can't avoid them, but we encourage control programs, particularly in parks and places where people frequently go to the beach or go to the water.
That's a pretty serious problem that really hasn't been much out in the public arena.
Again, I don't think people think of toxoplasmosis. They think about the nuisance associated with cats, fleas, and the odor of their feces and so forth, more than they do about some of these health problems. So I think this discussion is very good about making people aware that there are issues that need to be considered.
And Dr. Work, I know you and I have had some conversations. You had flagged some studies about the how toxo can change the behavior of rats, and that there's research being done to show how it is possibly affecting human behavior.
Yeah, that's actually a very cool part of this parasite. So in addition to its really interesting life cycle, they've now shown that this parasite can modulate host behavior. And when you think about it, most hosts, like humans, if you get infected, you're what's called a dead-end host. That parasite that's in your muscle or in your tissues is not going to be able to have sex unless it gets into a cat. So that parasite has to figure out some way for you to get eaten by a cat. And they've shown, at least for rats, that they lose their aversion to fear to cat urine, and they become more reckless in the presence of cats, less fearless. And so from the parasite standpoint, that makes eminent sense, right? Because if the rat that's infected with these dormant stages gets eaten by the cat, that's a way for the parasite to get in the cat gut and have sex. So this is actually really cool. And now they're showing that in humans. They're finding that humans that are infected with toxoplasmosis tend to be more reckless, tend to be more prone to have accidents. They've seen that there are some studies that have shown associations between schizophrenia and being seropositive for Toxoplasma gondii. So there are things that this parasite may do above and beyond just causing pregnancy problems and eye problems that we don't really quite know yet.
Here's a caller from Hawaii Island. Tom, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. You actually just answered my question. I had read studies about mental illness associated with the toxoplasmosis. But also, where I live, there's quite a few feral colonies up in the little town of Waimea. And there's even one over at the school that they encourage by feeding the children, or the cats. The children feed the cats. And then they have little garden plots that they eat stuff that they grow out of that the cats poop in all the time. I've talked to the school before about it, but it's amazingly still going on. And one last comment. Because of the feral colonies in my little town, I've caught 20 cats in my yard over the last 2 years that I've taken over to the Humane Society, and they deal with them however they end up dealing with them. But thank you for taking my call.
Tom, thanks for calling. Jerry, you just said that's a very bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
feeding feral cats, having a garden which nearby, the feral cats are fertilizing.
Probably not a wise thing to do.
With possibly infected feces.
Correct.
Can I just speak to the behavioral changes for just a second?
Of course.
With that study, we honestly don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. So we don't know if these people were mentally unstable, you know, prior to getting infected with toxo, or if toxo came after. So we don't know if maybe someone was mentally unstable and it caused them to have behavior that would make them more prone to toxo. I mean, if someone's mentally unstable, what's stopping them from eating cat feces, for example, or eating raw meat? So that's an important point to make.
We've got a number of email comments that have come in. Catherine, what have you got there?
Well, there's one here from Peter. If the risks of T. gondii infection are as great as your panel suggests, How do they explain the fact that the infection rate in the U.S. has dropped in half between 1988 and 2010? The scaremongering doesn't stand up to the science here. Joshua also emailed and says that he spends many hours photographing our native birds on the Big Island. His personal stance is the same as New Zealand's. Feral cats are an invasive predator. In addition to spreading toxo, our native wildlife are far more important than the cats. Another one also from Christy. She says she's curious why local health professionals don't consider toxo a risk. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention says that toxo is considered to be a leading cause of death attributed to foodborne illness in the United States. So we've got just a variety of things, people very passionate about this issue, whether they're for the birds or for the cats or for human health. But I guess part of the conversation I want to start is, what do we do about it? What are the solutions? How do we change people's behavior, either keeping your cats in your apartment or, by fining,
Well, that's what it gets down to. I mean, this... Mm-hmm. It makes common sense that people shouldn't release unwanted animals to the wild. I mean, that's I think, probably the biggest single problem. I've actually, when I was out at Oceanic Institute, we tried to maintain a cat colony, and it got a reputation of being a nice place to take cats, and it grew into an unmanageable situation very quickly. Got out of hand, just because people thought of it as a place to drop off their cats. The caretakers simply couldn't keep up with it. But they should be taken to a shelter or the Humane Society for effective management. If you don't want your cat, don't just let it go. You know, take it to a Humane Society or a shelter and try to get it adopted. Don't let your domestic cat roam outside. I mean, that's where it's getting exposed most likely to toxo. And then support programs to spay and neuter cats. I mean, those things are fundamental, and we need to really focus on those. Getting back to the question of what the rates are, they really don't know. They don't have a good number. The Centers for Disease Control thinks the rate of infection is about 10%. Nationwide. We've never done any surveys that I know of in Hawaii. There's no reason to think it's any different. It might even be a little higher because of our people spend a lot more time outdoors here than they do elsewhere. In some countries, actually, have done surveys and found the rates to be 70, 80, even 90% of the population's been exposed. So it varies considerably depending on where you're going. I suspect in some rural areas, Waimea might be a good example, but, where there are lots of cats, you're going to see much higher rates of infection than others. But getting to the solution, it's going to be controlling human behaviors and as Dr. Work pointed out, making sure people are responsible who have cats.
So who's going to take the lead? Who's going to set policy? What do we need to do? Do we need to introduce bills at the legislature to fund either education programs or studies?
Well, it seems, the knee-jerk reaction is always, well, the government's got to do something and the government's going to help. But honestly, everybody in this island can start right now by taking personal responsibility for the cats that they have. And, if we could just even do that and recognize that you have an animal, when you take an animal as a pet, you have a responsibility to take care of that animal. It's like a kid, for crying out loud, and you should take care of that animal just like your kid. And you shouldn't be letting it loose in the park and letting it loose in the wild. So if everybody could take that message to heart, that would be a big step in the right direction. And then after that, absolutely, get the legislator on board. To instead of promoting trap and neuter, how about promoting enforcement of cat licensing, enforcement of fining people who let their cats loose, again, to try to stem the source of these animals. If we can turn the tap down and turn the flow down of these unwanted animals, the problem would solve itself eventually.
I think all of the policymakers, the legislators in particular, again, aren't really familiar with the risks. I think the cat, the caretakers, the people who care about cats have been much more vocal, much louder than those who are looking at the risks, and I think that's a part of a problem. There was only one bill to legislature this year on the issue that at least it was alive. And it actually exempted cat caretakers from laws that would otherwise prohibit feeding animals or confining those animals. And I really think that's sort of a backwards approach. I mean, again, I guarantee toxo is not even thought about in this legislation. It's not even mentioned in any of the issues, nor frankly are some of the threats to wildlife. It's really it's a compassionate approach that seems to be prevailing without any consideration of some of the downsides.
Well, Bruce, a perfect example of that would be that caller who just called in and said at the school they're feeding a feral cat colony and creating a garden with, you know, basically fertilized by those feral cats, which sounds like a pretty much a recipe for spreading disease. Done I'm sure, the best of intentions, but, you know, a pretty bonehead idea given the science.
Right.
Fair to say?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't think anyone should be eating out of a poop bed, and no one's, you know, going to realistically do that. I agree, it's not a good idea to do that. But again, the risk of infection is low when we consider the population of cats actually shedding these eggs at any given time. And I'm sure there's members of the public out there thinking, oh my gosh, there's so many of us infected with toxo. You have to remember that infection does not mean disease, okay? Just because you're infected doesn't mean you're going to have disease from it. You build up immunity to it. Severely immunocompromised individuals, like those with AIDS or cancer or diabetes, like Dr. Anderson mentioned, they're more at risk for reactivation of toxo in their system. And, you know, that's something to consider. But at the same time, I mean, my father just passed away from cancer, and one of his best friends during those final weeks was his cat, and his cat was an outside cat. And there was no worry on our part or the part of his oncologist that his outside cat would give anything to him. So you can take the consideration that the risk is extremely low.
Any physician will recommend now to a pregnant woman to avoid cat litter and exposure to cats for that
correct.
Reason.
Correct. Yeah, but if we look at the number of babies that are actually born with toxo across the U.S., it's low. It's 400 to 4,000 is the current estimate. Approximately 30% of babies with a mother that has an acute toxoplasmosis infection can acquire that infection from the mother. But 90% of those babies have no symptoms, while the other 10% go on later in life to perhaps have symptoms.
Keep in mind that across the country, toxo is not a reportable condition, so the physicians don't know who to report it to, even if they see it. Hawaii is actually the only state in the country that makes it reportable. So and even then, physicians don't recognize many of the illnesses probably. It's not dissimilar to rat lungworm disease. There's a lot of it out there, and most people don't even know they've got it. I mean, it's a parasite, not too dissimilar. It ends up crawling around in your nervous system and ends up dying in your brain and setting up an inflammatory reaction, causes eosinophilic meningitis, and your brain swells up, and of course it can cause serious problems. But it's only the serious cases we see, but there could be a lot of other people who have are minor symptoms, and they blow it off as being the flu or something else. So I think the incidence of the disease depends on what the spectrum of disease is and what you're looking at. It could be a lot higher than what you're hearing about. We really don't know, but it's fair to say that most people don't show signs or symptoms of the disease. But the infection rates are not insignificant.
So, Bruce, why is it that we're the only state that requires a count?
Oh, I like to think Hawaii's very progressive, and we worry about things that a lot of the states don't worry about. You know, we have standards for chemical pollutants that other states don't have. We've got a lot of good reporting systems in place in Hawaii. We're very good from that standpoint.
We are getting lots of emails. Judith writes in, if toxo is such a risk to humans, the colony caretakers would be all dead 10 times over by now. Judith says she's been to the Lanai Cat Sanctuary. It's amazing. The cats are healthy and tame. It's staffed by paid workers. Why can't we do something similar on all islands? And then we have Bob from Maui. He says around a year ago, he saw an article in the Maui Times about an Alaskan town that proposed to its city council that cats need to be on a leash like dogs. You know, interesting ideas. I don't know how workable some of these suggestions are.
Correct. I don't think the sanctuary idea, it's a nice idea. The one on Lanai, I haven't had the chance to go there yet. I've seen pictures and stuff. It's beautiful. But you're talking about cats, feral cats who are not sick, and they're more like lap cats there. So imagine what happens to the other ferals that aren't. So they're brought in from all over the island to protect places like the bird refugees and stuff like that. But they're funded by a billionaire. And so who's going to fund something like that on Oahu would be my question.
Well, I might add, though, that there's, you know, a lot of the feral cat organizations have very fancy websites and very good PR efforts. So there's got to be money going into that. There's money from the cat food companies that are providing food for, you know, or people buying cat food. So I think this could be a big money thing for the feral cat trap and neuter proponents. And, you know, I want to bring it back. You know, people are tending to poo-poo the toxoplasmosis. Yeah, it doesn't cause disease, you know, raging disease in a bunch of humans. But I want to bring it back to the wildlife. Even though it's not killing a bunch of humans, it is for sure killing monk seals. It is for sure killing ala-ala. It is for sure killing nene. And we need to keep the welfare of the wildlife in mind here. I mean, there's these animals have a right to live too. They were here before us, and somebody needs to speak out for these animals and their welfare and their well-being and their right to exist. I mean, we're losing Newell shearwaters in Kauai mainly to feral cats. That's a critically endangered seabird. Why can't we as a society come up with some sort of solution to manage that, to deal with that, to recover these critically endangered birds?
As you well know, in Hawaii, we've lost more species than any place in the world. We're the world capital of self-destruction.
That's right.
Environmental self-destruction.
And it's ironic that we have a problem where the solution is staring us in the face. The solution in terms of reducing the number of cats that are being produced and reducing the number of animals in the wild habitat.
You're talking eradication.
Eradication and reduction at the source. They have to go hand in hand. You can't do one without the other. Because as long as you have sources of animals, you're going to be spinning your wheels. So we have to come to a consensus on responsible ownership, licensing, finding people who have cats that are in the wild. And with that, in concert with eradication, I think we could deal with the problem.
Are you in agreement with that, Jessica?
I'm in agreement with tougher fines for abandonment and irresponsible pet owners in general. The eradication, no. I understand the threat to native species. I do question the science behind some of it. I don't understand how they're counting all of these species or how they know that these are more acute infections, meaning how do they know that the animal wasn't infected with toxo before and built up an immunity to it and then was severely immunocompromised by something else in the environment that would have caused toxo to come in and attack them where normally it wouldn't have any effect on them. And so you have a lot of lay people who, you know, don't have PhDs, for example. We don't understand the science behind it. We aren't seeing the research. We're questioning the holes in it. And I think there's a gap between what you guys know and what the public knows.
If I could just add, and I might say, my wife and I had a cat, slept on her bed. I'm not opposed to cats. It's really the feral cats that I think are the problem here, and also responsible cat ownership. I have never seen anyone argue there's a real benefit from having feral cats out there. I mean, there is really no benefit that I can think of offhand, except maybe some sort of a feeling of compassion and worthiness that people get when they feed those cats. But they really don't serve a function that I can see as being beneficial. They do a lot of harm out there. They transmit diseases. Terry's spoken well to the threat to wildlife. But that's the target. You know, we're not talking about eliminating cats. We're just talking about reducing the number of feral cats and perhaps eliminating them in the wild situations where they really aren't doing anything that's beneficial. So I think there is a middle ground that we can reach. A lot of it's going to boil down to human behavior, more fines perhaps, not feeding cats in certain situations where there are increased risks to wildlife, such as parks, maybe harbors and other places where you have lots of exposures that would be uncertain or harmful. But we haven't gotten to that point. We need to have this discussion around some of these issues and not just sort of cave in and say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. We can do a lot more.
Sounds as if one thing that we agree on is that rolling up to a place where feral cats assemble, throwing a bunch of food on the ground and leaving is not the way to go.
It's not okay.
That's not good.
You need to have, in my opinion, you need to have responsible caretakers.
So that's a big part of the problem is what it sounds like.
That's only encouraging the problem. And that's why we have now 300,000 cats are here.
So you're encouraging the problem, perhaps thinking you're doing good, but you're not.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, by throwing food out there, remember, you're not only feeding cats, you're feeding rats, you're feeding mice, you're feeding all sorts of other critters that are going to take, you know, advantage of that food. And, you know, we have problems with invasive rats killing forest birds, eating birds' nests and stuff like that. So, I mean, this, again, it's one of these situations where by dealing with this issue in a coherent manner, where you deal with the source and you you control what's in the wild, you could do a lot for wildlife.
Well, I'd like to thank all three of you for being with us, and to all our callers. We'd like to thank our guests. Jessica James is a medical instructor, volunteers with Poi Dogs and Popoki. Bruce Anderson is director of the Division of Aquatic Resources.
Thanks to everyone who called in today. We will be right back after a short break.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from First Insurance Company of Hawaii, providers of auto, home, commercial, and specialty lines of insurance since 1911. First Insurance Company of Hawaii, FICOH.com.
I'm Jennifer Glass. Coming up on the next On Point, 50 years ago, 2001, A Space Odyssey hit the big screen. The making of the movie was its own incredible odyssey. We'll hear it. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 2.
Thanks for joining us on the conversation. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the talkback line. That number is 808-792-8217.
You also can send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation.